This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Grand Canyon University's RN to BSN online degree program makes earning your bachelor's in nursing possible. Balance online coursework with local in-person clinicals to position yourself for potential leadership opportunities in the time you have from wherever you are, leaving room for what matters. Achieve your goals with your personalized plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
Can you show me, because we're going to use some hermeneutics, can you show me anywhere in the Old Testament where that word perpetual is not perpetual? Because, yes, again, I understand you're appealing. Again,
sure.
Again,
no, hold on.
God's laws, where any of God's laws.
Hold on.
Now, wait a minute. I thought I was going to get to have a talk
you,
here.
You asked a question.
Hang on a second, sir. Be quiet now.
Okay.
Hang on a second.
Now, well, there you go. I will mute you because it's not your show. You asked a question. I'm going to give you the answer. Genesis 6:4, the word olam is used referring to those who were of old. Deuteronomy, I'll get just rattle off all the ones where it's used not referring to perpetual. Genesis 6:4, Deuteronomy 32:7, Joshua 24:2, 1 Samuel 27:8, Job 22:15, Psalm 24:7, 24:9, 25:6, 41:13, 77:9, 90:2, 103:17, 106:48, 119:52, 143:3, Proverbs 8:23, Proverbs 22:28, Proverbs 23:10, and Ecclesiastes 1:10. Should I go on for more?
Blah, 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 blah.
This is Apologetics Live. To answer your questions, your host from Striving for Eternity Ministries, Andrew Rappaport.
All right, well, welcome. We are live, Apologetics Live, Thursday nights, to answer your apologetics questions, anything that you may have for us apologetically, challenges, questions. Maybe someone gave you something that was difficult for you to answer. This is the place for you to ask that. Now, tonight we're going to try to do something, but Dr. Sylvester is having trouble, like, hearing me, and so he probably enjoys that fact. But then again, if that's the case, we just won't add him in, and then I get to enjoy that fact. Well, we'll see. I'm guessing from him laughing. I see him in the lower screen. He's laughing, so I'm going to guess that he can hear me. But we'll soon find out. So Apologetics Live is a ministry of Striving for Eternity. I encourage you guys to go to strivingforeternity.org to check out all the resources that we have there. It is also a podcast that you could hear on the Christian podcast community, which also is a ministry of Striving for Eternity. So tonight's topic is going to be the topic of, should Christians vote for Trump? Now, this should be lots of fireworks, so I'm going to let Anthony Silvestro take all the fireworks, but he figured he would bring help in. So I guess he feels inadequate to the task, and you know, I don't know if I should refer to him as Dr. Luke or Sean, but but I'll bring you both in. Sean, you'd be new to folks here, so why don't you introduce yourself, and maybe you could explain why I called you Dr. Luke. Okay, Sean, is that working now? Try closing the window down, that tab in your browser, and then go back in through the link. So, love to do technical stuff live. All right. So, if you heard that intro is from last week's Apologetics Live. That was a great intro. If you listened, if you did not listen to last week's Apologetics Live, you'd want to listen to that. Jim there, also known as Mr. Batman, that's how he came in as, was going to use hermeneutics, as he liked to say. But the one thing he failed to do was actually use any hermeneutics.
Yeah, for some reason, when I plugged my headphones in, it muted everything else.
Oh, nice. Okay.
How about that?
Well, we can hear you now. Anthony, can you hear
me now?
I can, yeah.
All right, good. Finally, we can get started. Okay, good.
I had to go out and come back in, I guess. Okay.
Yeah.
Good deal.
All right. That's good. It's good, you know, good 10 minutes of the show.
That's a way to kill some time.
Yeah. All right. Well, maybe we'll edit that out of the podcast portion. So if you heard the intro there, and Sean might have been able to hear while Anthony was having his technical issues, but that was a great example. If you listened last week to a guy who claims he was going to use hermeneutics, and that's the very thing he didn't use, and didn't like being shown how hermeneutics actually works. But last week's episode will be a good one for those of you who want to see how to deal with a steamroller, someone who's just going to just go over, just try to ignore everything you say. They're not there to learn. They're there to challenge and to really to attack. So I encourage you to go to last week's episode and check that out. That was on dealing with Hebrew Roots Movement and its ilk, the author of the book Torahism. So with that, this week we're going to talk about, should Christians vote for Trump? This was Dr. Silvestro's brainchild, so we'll blame him. If this doesn't go well, it's all his fault. If it does go well, it is all because he invited Sean here. That's how this is going to go. So, Sean, since you're new, so Dr. Silvestro is a speaker at Striving for Eternity. I think many of the regular listeners here are familiar with him. But Sean, you're a new face. So how about you introduce yourself and the, you know, what you do ministry-wise?
Sure. Thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate your guys' work. You guys do some excellent work in the Lord. I just want to commend you guys for that. Dr. Luke, that's just my radio handle. I am the host of the Word for America program on Grace Life Radio. Those on this channel probably have no idea what that is, but you can check that out too. It's Grace Life Radio. And my name is Sean Wall. I'm actually a physician assistant, so I'm a PA. So I'm not a medical doctor, but I'm a PA. And that we go with, obviously, most Christians understand the handle of Dr. Luke as the physician. So there you go. Quick roundabout.
All right. So let's deal with this, Anthony. I don't know if you have an opening, but I will put in the show notes later. I have an article that usually around this time of year gets me the most heat, that's on Striving for Eternity's website on Christians and political activism. Here's one thing I'll put as a caveat, and the one line in that paper that gets me in the most trouble. And I don't think, knowing the two gentlemen that we have on, that they're going to disagree with it. But what frustrates me is when professing believers seem to know the Republican Party's message and very willing to share that, but they don't quite know the gospel message, and they're not willing to share that. As Christians, we better be sharing the gospel message way more than the political message, in my opinion. And I'm sure someone will come in and maybe disagree with me, but Anthony, I'm gonna give you the floor to start us off. And I see we already got some folks coming in here, so go for it.
Yeah. So, you know, this started because of the first time Trump ran. You know, so we're looking at 4 years ago now, and I remember that there was a lot of Christians who would say that they couldn't vote for for Trump, a guy like Trump who was immoral and had sexual trysts and all the different stuff that is in his background. And so people kept saying, yeah, there's no way. No, actually it was 4 years ago, Andrew. I see your comment there. It had to be 4 years ago because it was during the election cycle where people were saying that, and we're in the election cycle right now. So 4 years ago, people were saying all these things about Trump. that they didn't want to vote for Trump because they had problems with his background. And instead, they wanted to vote for a third party candidate who, you know, a guy named Tom Hoefling seems like a nice guy.
And
a lot of people were getting back behind him. Now, granted, he couldn't win much of the vote.
Who is that? I don't know that name. Who is he?
Tom Hoefling.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he must be really well known. He almost won, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, Tom Hoefling, Hoefling. So people got behind him because he and his wife are activists in the pro-life movement. And Tom Hoefling is a professing Christian. What is really interesting as an aside in all this is that I started doing some digging in who he was, because you had a lot of Christians say they would not vote for Trump. Now, look, I'm going to start right off the bat saying, do I believe that Trump displays a good moral character? Well, no, of course not. And he doesn't seem to be repentant, biblical repentance anyway, in terms of a lot of his past. And the argument that I was making 4 years ago is that we aren't voting for a pastor. We are voting for a politician. And in my belief, my central core is that I believe we are supposed to vote for the guy who is closest to the Christian worldview, even if both candidates seem very far apart from the Christian worldview. And in using that as kind of my starting point in all this, and there's good reasons for that, and I think that will come out during the show today, I did research Tom Hoefling. Because one of the problems that I had is when people said they couldn't vote for Trump, I would say, okay, well, who are you going to vote for? Tom Hoefling was one. Other people say, well, I don't know, or I'm just not going to vote. And I would ask, well, why? And they said, well, I would only vote for somebody who's godly. And, okay, that's fine. Vote for somebody godly. Give me a definition for godly. And this is the struggle, right? I mean, the same reason when we go out and we do witnessing, and 99% of people that we talk to, unbelievers that we talk to, that say, that we ask them, are you going to go to heaven when you die? And they say yes. What is the number one reason they say that they're going to go to heaven? It's because they do good things or good works, or I'm a good person, or, you know, something of that sort. So they are invoking a standard of good and bad. The problem is it's their own standard. It's not the standard of the Bible, right? So we have God's standard of good, which is himself, which is perfect. And then, you know, everything that falls short of that. So the same Christians who, look, are wonderful people. They are wonderful gospel proclaimers on the streets, a lot of them. A lot of them share the gospel faithfully. They understand this context when it comes to God and his goodness. But yet, when they look at political candidates and they come up with this idea of godly, what's the definition now? Because if you're using a definition of godly in a biblical sense, the way that they use it in every other context of their life, then the only person you can ever vote for is Jesus Christ. And if it's not Jesus, then you can't vote for anybody. And of course, that's silly. They don't actually believe that. They believe that it has to be somebody of some moral character, to which I say, okay, what is that moral character? Give me some type of criteria that gives us a good moral character, somebody that's good enough to vote for. And that's something that everybody had failed to do. What I found interesting is when I started doing some digging in Tom Hoefling, I want to know who he was, that it didn't take very long for me to look past him, but look at his wife's Facebook and some of her social media stuff. And his wife is not a Christian. His wife is a Mormon. And I and a few other guys that I told this to, we all saw the page, and we all saw it on Facebook, saw it on the internet, and each one of us reached out to Tom and asked him if this is true. Is your wife a Mormon? Because you're proclaiming that you and your wife are Christians and are trying to garner Christian votes. And what happened after that? He didn't respond to any of us. And then his wife's Facebook got completely wiped. So if you go on his, and I just did this a few days ago, actually, if you go on his wife's Facebook page, you will find that it starts somewhere in 2017. So it was actually wiped when I brought it up, and then even stuff a little bit after that got wiped, or she just didn't go back on Facebook again for a little while. So there's only a couple of years of history there now where there was a much longer history. So, and look, Tom may be a Christian himself, but his wife is certainly not. And so I brought this up to guys and said, guys, you're voting for somebody who's actually married to a Mormon. Would you call that godly? And it was with that that people didn't want to have the conversations anymore. And, you know, Andrew, we both talked about this during this time. And I know you felt the same way I did, and there was a lot of other people that did too. They were afraid to say anything publicly because they would just get blasted on Facebook over this. And then shortly after we had talked about this, and I talked about this on a different podcast, we saw John MacArthur come out and say virtually the same thing. We saw forgot the name now.
Well, that is because John MacArthur follows you on social media, if case people don't know.
I mean, I said it first, certainly.
Forgive Anthony for his Joe Biden moment.
So we should call him Sleepy Anthony? We'll call him Sleepy Anthony.
Well, one thing you will not find is me with my face puckering up to anybody behind him other than my wife. Wayne Grudem is the other name that I was thinking about. Wayne Grudem came out about the same time as John MacArthur did. And then, you know, other guys were coming out and saying the exact same thing. So I'm going to leave that as kind of the starting point. I've got a lot more things to say over the next hour and a half, but I don't know if you wanted to chime in, Sean, on this. I invited you to come on because I see how political you are, and you are a guy that I and maybe it's just because we probably think alike, but you think very clearly. You are very logical, and you have a funny sense of humor that I just love on Facebook.
appreciate that. I would like to say my wife believes all of those things too, but it's probably not the case. But what I would say, you're right on point with the Hoffling issue and the whole. There is hypocrisy even amongst the evangelicals when we want to dump Trump. If you remember, that was the mantra that was being said and running rampant when Trump was starting to gain some momentum. But if you just go back 4 years prior to that in 2012, who was our primary choice? Mitt Romney, who was a Mormon, and those same evangelicals, and I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but many of them who wanted to dump Trump, those same exact evangelicals had zero problem with casting that vote for Mitt Romney in 2012, didn't bat an eye, and they were, and all of a sudden in 2016, were all over Donald Trump for his moral failings. What they were doing is they were looking at the moral characteristics, and both of you guys know that professing evangelicals will put theology to the wayside when it comes to those types of issues. And I'm not saying that we're going to vote for a pastor in chief, because we're not. We're voting for someone who is to lead our country. And if I were voting for Donald Trump as a pastor, I would not cast my vote. He does not meet the biblical qualifications for an elder. So I'll be the first one to say that as too. And Anthony, you said that in a different way, but it's the exact same thing. So, Andrew, when you came on the show, you had made the point about we have no trouble with basically proselytizing our political views, but we have trouble proselytizing and being evangelicals or being witnesses for the gospel. And I will answer your question, and you guys know this as good as I do. People will shout from the mountaintops mostly what they know. And if evangelicals are more interested in talking partisan politics rather than the gospel, it's because they know partisan politics better than they know the gospel. And when I say partisan politics, that's what I mean, because all they know is the partisan talking points. They don't know both sides. They can't make an argument for both sides. If you remember, and I don't know if you guys, in 2016, one of the libertarian candidates, and I've got a Joe Biden moment because I can't remember his name because he was irrelevant, but nonetheless, they asked him about Aleppo, and he had no clue where Aleppo was. He was running for president of the United States, and he didn't had any clue about geography in the Middle East. So again, we have to understand and know the things that we're going to talk about before we can talk about them. We have to know what we believe. We got to know why we believe it. And if we don't know those things, we can't effectively communicate those things with others.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, one of the things is, okay, here's just a general question we can ask anyone today. Right today, right now, the things we're dealing with this virus and stuff. Are we not very glad that Hillary Clinton lost? I mean, could you picture what this would be like if we had Hillary Clinton in the White House right now? That would be scary.
And everybody would be mandated to wear pantsuits.
Well, no, basically, they would. If there was a Democrat right now, they would be looking to take over the government, to have government control of everything. Okay. You know, Sean, you kind of swerved into something that I always say is I'm voting for president, not pastor. There's a big difference mm-hmm. between those two. You know, and everyone talks about the morality of, you know, now let me take it from the left. They always talk about the morality of Trump. They're the ones that bring this up. And then there are a bunch of Christians that go, oh yeah, I can't vote for him because his morality. But yet, what about the morality of Bill Clinton? They defended that. And let's compare those mm-hmm. two. I mean, I'm sorry, but Trump is not a moral guy, granted. All right? Multiple mm-hmm. affairs. But he also gets the women to sign non-disclosure agreements. We now know that. I mean, that is very different than, you know, Clinton, who it's like, oh, there's a woman in a skirt. Let me go after her. And someone who goes, wait, first, I'm going to give you this legal document to sign. I mean, the characterization that they made of Trump, that he chases after everyone and sleeps with anyone that kind of, it's like, it doesn't seem to be the case. He does sleep around, but I just notice how with one party that it's like, oh, well, we're going to bring it out when Trump does it. I mean, it's been a while since they had a president on the Republican side that they could say chases after women because they've usually been way too old or something, but well, even Trump's too old, but,
sure.
but the thing that you end up seeing is you look at Biden in the Me Too movement. I mean, like Anthony, you're joking about it, but seriously, do we actually expect that Biden's morality and his inappropriate touching and the way he handles is around and, with women, do we really going to say and expect that the media is just going to go, oh yeah, that's fine. It's just, we're going to talk about Trump's. So there, we have to understand, I mean, one of the things that we have to understand with it is there is a narrative that the left would like Christians to say. They're the ones that bring up Trump's immorality so often. And I think there's, it's purposeful. They want to undermine the vote for him. And I think a lot of Christians look at this and go, oh yeah, yeah, we shouldn't be supporting him. And like you said, Anthony, they're going to go support someone because he's a Christian and then maybe find out he's not. He just speaks like a Christian, like, you know, Glenn Beck would do, right? And actually be Mormon. Mm-hmm. So the thing is I think there's different qualifications for pastor than there are for president. President, you have someone that's a governing factor. You want someone who can govern well. And I think that Trump has done that. I actually think many Christians who have told me, I didn't vote for Trump the first time, but I'm going to now based on his governing. So
you're touching upon an interesting thing. So let me ask both of you guys this question. Why vote? Why? Because I believe that a Christian has a duty and a responsibility to vote. So why is that? Why should we vote? Because if we have to vote, then we have to either vote for the lesser two evils or find a third party candidate, although that's a whole different topic to talk about here.
Sure.
Because the issues that brings up, the inability to win and whatnot. But so let's just start sure. there. Why vote?
Well, I'll jump in here.
Yeah, I want you to.
I'm probably going to go maybe a little bit deeper than the questions you're asking, but fine. We have to, you know, where do we start from? You know, the question would be, am I a theonomist or am I not? Is that fair enough?
Fair.
I mean, that's going to be a starting point for some people. Granted, very few people, but your starting point should be there. So let's take theonomy off the table. Yeah. And let's say, and then we'll ask the question, if you're not a theonomist, why should you vote?
And can I stop you for just a moment, Sean?
Go ahead, sure.
And I just want to say, what is interesting is, now granted, we all live in a small bubble, right, of reform guys, at least in soteriology, right? Mm-hmm. And so this is certainly not indicative of Christianity in general. However, you hit on a subject, because most of the people that have made the claims that they can't vote for somebody that's moral, or that's immoral, right, in their minds, are theonomists. It is almost always the case. So I'm sorry, I will yes. let you keep going now.
No, and that's why I said that's kind of where your starting point would be. But nonetheless, you know, Romans 13, right? You know, that's where we go. You know, when we're talking about the Bible and when we're talking about running these types of things through a Christian worldview, Romans 13 tells us what is the role of government? It's to protect us, right? And the government, you know, God has instituted us, and us three, we are blessed to have been sovereignly placed in the United States of America, where we have that right, where we have that ability to go and vote. He could have sovereignly placed us in Iran. Fair enough. And if we were sovereignly placed in Iran, could any of the three of us cast a vote? In a democratic world,
no,
mm-hmm.
no. So I go to look. God has placed all three of us here in the United States of America. He has placed us under the rule of a government because we are under that government, whether we like it or not. Donald Trump's our president, right? You know, these silly shirts you see. Not my president. It's the dumbest thing. Like, Barack Obama was my president. And, hey, and I will say this too. Look, I'm and, a captain. Wait,
what, in the United what States would Army. They have? What would they have sent to you, Sean, if you had a shirt that said "Barack Obama's not my president"? What would they have said to you if you did that?
in the Army?
Well, if you were walking around on the streets with a shirt that said "Barack Obama's not my president." They would call you a racist.
I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be here. You would have long had my eulogy would have been read. But so back to my point. God has sovereignly placed us in a country where we have a democracy, where the government, the Constitution, has given us the right to, you know, given us the right to vote. Therefore, I believe. We are obligated to vote because God has placed us under that governance to vote. And who we vote for, you've got every right to vote for anybody you wish. You can do it. You can write in Mickey Mouse. You can do anything you want. But at the bottom line, and this always comes down to the issues every 4 years in the with the primaries. This obviously is an uncontested election for the conservatives, but. We essentially have a two-party system, whether you like it or not. That is the way that it is. That is the way that the power in politics has shaped this country. And you are going to get one of two people elected president. It's either going to be someone from the Democratic Party or it's going to be somebody from the Republican Party. You can vote Libertarian all you like. You can vote any other party that you like. There's a whole host of them out there. The fact of the matter is that one of the two major parties are going to be the president of the United States. That's fact. That's real. That's facts. That's just the way that it is.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and it's funny when you say that, because the guys that aren't happy about that, I tell them, hey, you got a solution. You know, that solution is called grassroots campaign. Find a candidate that you think is going to be the godly candidate that you want and do the grassroots campaign. I mean, look, the models out there, right? AHA did a wonderful job of going around and, beating down churches and.
That'd be the way to say it. Beating down churches. They weren't ending abortion. They were too busy protesting churches.
But the point is that those guys are not to get AHA stuff involved now, but you know, those guys have been really, they try to be very political. And now you've got the theonomists, BAMH, and those that have joined forces with AHA. And that's, again, this is a whole different topic we could spend hours on. They collectively say that they don't want to vote for the lesser of two evils, that they can't bring themselves to that. And yet they have no problem standing anywhere at a state capitol trying to influence politicians and influence what their votes are going to be. To me, it seems like it's
odd dynamic.
What's that?
It's an odd dynamic.
Yeah, isn't it? So I'm like, if you had this type of energy, why don't you raise that candidate you believe you have, take all the energy that you've used in, you know, going and beating down churches and everything else you're doing, and get these guys known by Christians and get them elected. They're not doing that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. I find this whole thing really interesting.
Okay, so let's, and I know Donnie was in here. We'll bring him in a moment. But here's my first question for you. You brought up this, and it's actually an ethic, okay, the lesser of two evils. So let's address that, because there's some people who say it is wrong to vote for the lesser of two evils, that we are to vote for a godly candidate. So let me ask you guys both to address this issue. What is wrong or right with voting for the lesser of two evils? What's your positions? Sean, I'll let you go first.
Well, can I just quote Spurgeon?
Absolutely.
No, Christians are not allowed to quote Spurgeon, you know. I mean, seriously.
Well, I'm going to quote Spurgeon, but I disagree with Spurgeon, because he says when it comes down to choosing the lesser of two evils, he says choose none. That is what Spurgeon's take on that. But again, Spurgeon was where? Spurgeon lived where?
He lived in England, and you know, he didn't have the right to vote.
Well, this always comes up when a lot of Christians will quote this. You guys may not have heard this, but when I talk about politics a lot, some Christians will quote that. Spurgeon was not talking about politics when he said that. He was talking about sin when it comes to that. He was talking about a comparison of sin and choosing neither of those. He was not talking about politics. So that is not the issue. I think I kind of had already made my statement about choosing not the lesser of two evils. We have to really choose a party, and you've heard this. This is over and over. People will say they're voting for the man, they're voting for the party, or they're voting for the platform, which is essentially the party. And usually you're voting for the party and the platform, because the men or the women in these, you know, in these last few elections, they're basically figureheads of the platforms. Donald Trump was different. He was not the same. He was not a platform. Nobody knew about Donald Trump. Nobody even knew. I mean, let's face it. When he spoke at his rallies, even when he speaks today, except when he has the speechwriters, he's very vague. He uses the same terminology over a very simple first, second grade terminology: tremendous, great, bigly, things like that. And he resonates with most of the American people by saying nothing. And I mean, and Barack Obama done the same thing. He just done it more eloquently than Donald Trump. You go back and look at their primary speeches, and I'm telling you, Obama would say a lot to say nothing. Donald Trump would say little to say nothing. So it's really a platform, and we know what the platform is. The left, their big issues: gay marriage, pro-abortion, and then you've got the antithesis of that on the other side. Socialism, they're moving more and more towards socialism on the other side, and then everything opposite of that on the right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And so for me, you know, to answer the question, I don't actually like the phrase lesser of two evils, because I don't believe that that's what we're doing. And so the phrase I like to use is what I used earlier, which is we are voting for the one that is closest to the Christian worldview. And I think one of
let me just tweak that a bit because sure. people here you're because they would end up saying that you should have voted for Tom then, but it's the you're voting for the best choice out of the choices that can win.
That's correct.
That's really how we, you know, they want to turn it. And this is the thing, the challenge of the lesser of two evils already puts you on the negative. It puts you on the defensive as if neither one are actually good. Well, that might be true, but you're going to vote out of the ones that can win. Because like you said, I mean, you know, people say, well, I'm not throwing away a vote. And this will be the next question come up. Because when people say, well, if I vote for the, you know, third party candidate, you're throwing away your vote. Okay. That's a challenge others will make. So we'll put that after you answer this one. So go for it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess we'll answer that afterwards, but just so, okay. So I don't phrase as less two evils, rephrase it. You're right. For the one that is most likely to win, but is closest to the Christian worldview. But I want to explain that a little bit further as to why it's important. We look at the last 3 years, 3.5 years now of Trump's presidency. And by and large, Christians have had freedom to do pretty much whatever we wanted. We've had the freedom to assemble. We've had the freedom to demonstrate. For the most part, we have the freedom to stand on street corners and preach the gospel. We have the ability to stand on sidewalks and preach at abortion clinics. We have the ability to go to state capitals and try to influence politicians. We have a lot of freedoms under him. The reality is the left wants to strip every one of those away. And how is the climate going to be in 8 years, 10 years, if after Trump is done with his presidency and we have a couple of Democrats, or at least a couple of 4 year terms of a Democrat come in who is an anti-Christian, which look, the reality is everybody that I know of on the left is anti-Christian. And so they want nothing more than to stamp out everything that we believe in and that we stand for. And so, you know, the guys that say they don't want to vote for less two evils or that they want to vote for the third party candidates, at the same time they're doing that, they are enjoying the freedoms that they have right now in a country that is given to them right now by Trump's freedoms. And hopefully those are the freedoms that are going to continue in this country. Now, it doesn't mean that, look, if a Democrat comes in and they start banning us from things, we as Christians still have to do what we as Christians do, which is share the gospel, even under the threat of persecution. But it's a much nicer to operate without that persecution. And it's much easier to. So,
yeah. And I mean, look, I've been very vocal that I think that whoever comes in after Trump is going to drive this country so far left that Christianity is probably going to be outlawed. So that's, you know, let me, I'm going to bring Andrew in because I know he said he's got to go. So Andrew, I don't even know. Do you guys get to vote down in your country in Australia? Do you have a process where you vote for your officials?
We have to vote. Do you
have coronavirus there? You know, we got to practice social.
Well, I don't have it. Just to be clear, I looked up as of the 19th, 709 cases, 6 deaths.
Yeah. So you guys got a few down over two then. Okay.
Yeah, but only 6 deaths.
Yeah, well, okay, so are you trying to say because the United States has, as of right now, 211 deaths? You have 7. I'm just to give you updated numbers like here, that. Sir.
Anyway.
You used yesterday's numbers. But, come on.
I've only got yesterday's numbers. That's the only latest thing I can find. And I was on another thing. I was on a Jeff... Durbin was doing it, just to go to a quick aside, he was doing a special on it, and I got banned from that stream by the internet. But, it deals with a lot of things. Anyway, my question would be, because in Australia, as I said, we have to vote or you get fined.
Hmm. Now, do you have to vote under your own name, or is it like in America where the Democrats have Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck voting, and all the New York Yankees vote in Ohio? So do you just have to vote, or you get to vote for other people?
You get to vote for whoever candidates are there. So we have a two party, which is a liberal and Labor, which is really there's a Greens party that's supposedly the third, but the Greens like to throw the science card at you when you start talking religion.
Yeah.
So basically they're out. And at the moment, actually, our Prime Minister does claim Christianity.
Yeah, I mean, so I think Scott it would be Morrison interesting. Does claim to be Christian. It would be interesting to see what would happen. We have a slight delay, sorry, but it'd be interesting to see what would happen in America if the people were required to vote else be fined. I mean, the one problem I have with, I get that, and that actually was, that used to be the way Rome did it many, many centuries ago. Everyone was required to vote. The interesting thing that was against that, and I think still true today, is that you have people who are ignorant of the details and the facts, that don't follow the politics, that are voting. And unfortunately, especially in today's day and age, I think that would outweigh the informed vote. So I almost wish that everyone would be required to vote after taking a test, that they actually are knowledgeable on the way government works. Then I'd be okay with it.
It is. And if you have a disability, you can have a get out of clause voting that you don't have to vote because you can't make a decision as to whether you want to vote or not. And basically, the other thing I was going to say is I vote because I want to say, as I said in the comments, I want to say, well, I didn't vote for him. So I didn't vote for whoever won. And I vote because I live with Asperger syndrome and epilepsy, and I live on a disability support pension, which comes directly from the government. So all of the services that I use and need access to come from the taxes, and I want to have a say in that.
Yeah.
So that's why I vote.
Yeah, I think...
I know a lot of Aspies who, once they find out that they don't have to vote, they take that route, and then they don't vote.
See, I think as Christians, I think, Anthony, you had said something similar to this, but I think as Christians, if we're given the right to vote, then I think we have a responsibility to vote. We're given in our country the ability to have a say in our government, and therefore what that, I think that means, is we need to be informed about our government. It doesn't mean we spend all day on Fox News. It means that you should be somewhat informed about the events of the days, what's happening, what the candidates' positions are. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I never, ever expected in America that we would have a president that would, especially Trump, show up at the March for Life. To be a president who is working very much to outlaw the federal funding of abortions, basically going to put abortion, I mean, if you remove the federal funding of Planned Parenthood, they would probably go out of business. I mean, it's the irony that all these liberals won't support Planned Parenthood, but they want our tax dollars to do it, right? And Trump is working very hard to end that. I look at this current situation with this virus, and I'm watching him do his reports every day, and what do you see? What you end up seeing is that every day he is, he's acting presidential. I mean, you're seeing him really put things in a proper perspective. They're asking him, well, does he think it's racist to call it the Chinese virus? And he's like, it's from China. Like, no one had a problem with the Spanish flu, the Asian flu, Ebola, which is named after a river. Like, it's like he just gives common sense answers sometimes. But I'm looking at this stuff and I'm seeing that if this was Bernie Sanders, he'd be saying, well, we'll help out the companies. We're just going to take them over. Right. I mean, anyone else would end up be taking this, they would be trying to bring in socialism. We have a guy that's saying, the federal government is going to help private sector which is going to help the economy when this thing's over. That's because of his background as a businessman. He understands that. And I think that's something different that I wouldn't have expected when, you know, when he first came for a vote. Anthony, you're going to say something.
You know, look at this. Look at some of the Marxism coming out right now, where the bailout money that is being earmarked for businesses, right, that Trump and out of his administration is saying that they're going to encourage those businesses that receive money to bring jobs back to America, right? They're gonna make something of it. How many guys on the left and females on the left have said that you need to give up a percentage of your business to either the government or some of your employees in order to receive these funds? I mean, that's right out of Karl Marx's playbook 150 years ago. Yeah. Straight out of it.
Yeah.
And people are blinded to this fact. It's unbelievable that the type of fight that we have on our hands right now, and you have people that just don't even get it. Here's a scary statistic, and I don't know, Sean, go on.
I was just going to say that is you guys know very well that in academia that is what's being propagated. It was basically Marxism, socialism, like whatever you want to call it. That's what we see. And I was just going to bring up a point that I had a friend of mine. I was in undergraduate school in the late 1990s, and he was a flaming liberal. I mean, very liberal. And we had pushbacks back and forth all the time. Interestingly enough, about 8 years go by, he graduates from college, starts his own business, and guess where his political views went?
To the right.
Opposite. He says, "You're not taking my money. You're not going to take." When he's a starving college kid, he's all for taking other people's money. But all of a sudden, when it's his own, he's got a problem with giving it out. Sorry to interrupt you. He was going to give us a statistic there, Andy.
Yeah, that's okay. You know, I was I was helping out my old friend. I wasn't saved when I was in college. So
wait. You're saved now?
Yeah, I opened either.
Yeah. But so I was in a fraternity for 4 years in college. And after I graduated and got saved, I actually went back and became one of their alumni board of directors. And I spent years doing this. And so I would go back once a month to the fraternity and I would help them out in the kind of like their everyday lives and the running of the fraternity and really pouring into these guys who were going to be out in real life in just a few years. And I got a chance to witness a lot to them, which was a lot of fun over the years. But one thing I found was really interesting is what you just said, is that these are kids who, young, you know, college-age kids, who for the most part were all liberal. And then what happens? They graduate, and I keep in contact with these guys, and it only takes a few years before most of them become conservative. Sure. Why? Because they're looking at their paychecks now, and they're seeing what liberalism does to the paycheck. So that's a pretty interesting thing. Now,
before you get off that, I mean, this is why I do think. And by the way, I put a comment up there from Mr. Mark Spence. He's saying that it looks like my books are practicing social distancing here compared to Anthony's. So, yeah. So, but
thanks,
here's
Mark.
But the
hey, point, Mark, we try to practice social distancing from Andrew anyway, let alone the coronavirus comes around.
That's why we do this online.
Yeah. No. So I don't know, Sean. You might know this statistic better than I do, but as I recall, in both of Obama's wins as president, that when they broke down what the media called evangelical Christians that voted. So, you know, they have a much more loose term than what we would have as Christians.
Oh, sure.
But what I remembered is that it was about 70% of evangelical Christians voted for the Republican and 30% voted for Obama. And then you look at, and then they had a separate category of Catholic, not Christian, right? And we would, that's one thing we'd agree with the liberals on, is that they're not Christian. But the right. Catholics who, look, pro-life, they're the right to life is like their big issue, right, politically. And yet they're split 50-50 in both of those elections. It was shocking to me to see this. Yep. And so I look at Christians and say, you guys want to influence politics, you want to influence and the pro-life movement and knock out Planned Parenthood, and you want to do some of these things, especially you theonomists and you post-mill guys. Well, why wouldn't you rally the troops and get voting? Because if 100% of Christians voted for the right candidate, you wouldn't have knocked all this stuff out already. It's unreal to me.
Well, it blows your mind. And in 2016, it was 81%. 81% actually voted. 81% of evangelicals voted for Donald Trump.
So it increased a little bit for Donald then. Yeah. So that means 20% of evangelicals voted for Hillary Clinton.
Sure.
Well, yes. Depending how you define evangelical, right. but yeah. I mean, but here's the thing, because I wanted to get to the point that you were making earlier as well, is this. I do think it's going to be interesting with this virus, because in about 9 months, we're going to start getting more and more conservative people. Because all of a sudden they're going to have mouths to feed, right? And it's going to be it's going to be very interesting how November's going to come around when people are concerned with jobs and, you know, there's pregnancies. There's a simple reason why leftists that want socialism are against marriage, against families, because they know, as you were saying, that once people start having to pay their own taxes and they start realizing mm-hmm. what the taxes are, they're having a family, they're having to earn a living, they suddenly become conservative. Why? Because they're aware of their, you know, what they're paying. This is the very reason why Democrats are so much against bills where people have to pay their own taxes. They'd much rather have your job take it out. So when they raise the taxes, nobody notices. And that's what they want. They don't want anybody to notice when they raise the taxes, because it just comes into your salary. Who do you blame? Oh, you blame the business for you not getting as much. You don't blame, you're not having to write that check. And that's a big thing for it. Now, the reality with what you're bringing up now, though, is I just don't think that people, when they're saying evangelical Christian, they're including, you know, Jimmy Carter in this. So, you know, like, they're basically including anybody that goes to church. And here's the funny thing I find about the statistics. When they want to talk about atheism and how we should be giving, you know, more listening more to atheists politically, then the numbers of evangelical Christians, the way they define that, changes. Right? Because suddenly there's more atheists, and all those people that don't believe in God but go to church are now atheists. Well, because they're practicing atheists anyway. So the numbers, it's the thing, when you apply just simple critical thinking to the news, it changes usually the whole way to interpret what they're actually saying. But
So, you know, one thing I want to make sure that we have crystal clear here, we kind of mentioned in the beginning, and you know, we're having a lot of fun talking about some politics here, is, you know, I know that you guys believe the same thing I do. Sean, you said this earlier, is I don't believe politics changes the heart of an individual, right? It's not going to do that. It is the gospel message. It is us being out there and using the law, show people their sin, give them the gospel, and watch God change hearts in people that can affect a nation. So, you know, I want to be clear for all the listeners is that it is the gospel that changes. There's no doubt about that. And I think our argument here, again, I want to be really clear, especially with my last little monologue, is that I don't believe that it's about us voting to change politics and change things. It is really about the gospel, but we have a responsibility to create the climate as beneficial as possible for us to work in. And if we can affect votes to be able to affect legislation on abortion or against abortion, why not do that? You know, the AHA guys love to go around and say that we're doing everything we possibly can do, right? Well, you're not doing everything you possibly can do if you're not out there getting third-party candidates, if that's what you need to do, grassroots efforts, or getting people that you want voted in that will help with the legislation. I mean, you're not actually doing everything you want to do.
Well, so, here's the thing, okay? when we talk about this, and I am clearly not a theonomist, okay? But this is where you're going to see the difference. I argue people will ask, what are you doing, you know, to stop abortion? What are you doing to, you know, I was on the board at a crisis pregnancy center. It's one of the questions they always ask. What have you done to try to, you know, put a stop to abortion? You know, you, with any of these things, my answer is really simple. You share the gospel with people. Now, my purpose in doing that is not to affect the culture, but that's a byproduct. Mm-hmm. You see, and this would be the difference with some theonomists, because for them, that's the purpose. The purpose is to change culture so that you can bring Christ back and bring in, you know, God's law being active. I'm not going out and sharing the gospel for the purpose of trying to change culture, but that is a byproduct. Look at the founding of this country. You had guys like Benjamin Franklin, not a Christian. Thomas Jefferson, not a Christian, but read their writings. Look at the language that they used. They knew they had to at least pretend to be a Christian because it was a Christian nation, whether the atheists want to admit it or not. It was a majority of Christians based on Christian principles. And the proof is that the unbelievers acted like they're Christians to get votes. And the reality is, if we were about the business of sharing the gospel, people's hearts would change. They would want to get, because they're right with God, they would want to vote that same way. And what would end up happening is you'd end up seeing the fact that the politicians would pretend. Even if they're not believers, they'd at least pretend because they want to get votes. That's what would end up happening. We don't do it for that purpose. That would be a theonomist way of going. But it is a byproduct. Mm-hmm. And I would say as Christians, we should be about spending our time sharing the gospel when we can so that people get saved. That's the more important thing. But a byproduct of it, the culture would be changed if that's happening enough. But too many Christians are too busy on Facebook and not in God's book, and too much into Fox News and not the good news. And that is the problem. They know the Republican message, but not the gospel message. They're not sharing it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. They don't know it. I mean, put it as simple as I can put it, is our faith, you know, our faith in the Lord should not be derived by our politics, but our politics should be derived by our faith. And we see a group of evangelicals out there that's not the case. And I'll just give you a classic, easy one, a softball, is our friend down at First Baptist Dallas, Mr. Robert Jeffress. He is an always Trumper. And in his eyes, I mean, Trump could do no wrong. And all three of us have already said that, look, I will call a spade a spade. Donald Trump is not a Christian. I don't care what he says, because Jesus said you will know them by their fruit. And his fruit is obviously a spoiled fruit. Now, that being said, that is because there's no repentance there. He has basically said that he does not need to ask for forgiveness. All of us had terrible fruit prior before we were saved as well. But when you get a prominent pastor who in the past has been a very good theologian that will not call these things out on Donald Trump, it's easy for the left-wing media to attack Donald Trump on those points when he is being defended at all points. We should, as Christians, look, Donald Trump by far, and it's going to, Joe Biden is going to be, you know, his head-to-head, who he's going to run against coming up in November. Donald Trump is by far going to be the candidate, the incumbent, who's going to protect us as Christians. That's just a fact. Anthony already made that point earlier. It's been easier on us since Trump has been a presidency. And not just Christians, but Muslims as well, Hindus as well. I mean, you have not seen the religious issues that we had with Barack Obama. In fact, ironically, if you guys go back to 9/11, you remember 9/11. Obviously, that was, you know, there was this whole issue with Islam, and nobody knew anything about Islam, and they started learning about Islam, and then there was this fight against Islam, and then all of a sudden there was this turn. Barack Obama becomes president, and then it was like the Christians were the bad guys. I mean, it was just this odd, weird turn of dynamics with politics. And that was not regained until 2016. So Donald Trump not being a Christian, look, he has still protected us regardless of what people want to say about him or not vote for him or vote for some other third party. Because if Joe Biden, if Joe Biden becomes president, which I think is highly unlikely, you're going to have, you know, remember they have cabinets and they're going to choose people for their cabinets. And if you remember the whack job down in Texas by the name of Beto O'Rourke, he is going to be on that cabinet. And he, you know, he has been very outspoken against Christianity and wanting to take the 501c3s away and, you know, against the Constitution and come. Look, that is what we're up against. So really when it comes down to it, and don't forget the Supreme Court. So that's something you got to think about as well. The Supreme, let's face it, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is on death's door. She's 87 years old. She's not going to make it, very unlikely she's going to make it through another presidency. So another, and we talk about abortion and being pro-life, another very solid pro-life candidate on that Supreme Court would be, it's imperative for us as believers.
Well, you know, there's a couple things. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the courts. Just look at the Ninth Court, what Trump has done there and changed the Ninth Court. Crazy. You mentioned Obama, and you know, there's something that most people were not paying attention well enough to know what happened with Obama was something. And that is, on the second day of his office, he did it in an executive order. He did an executive order to allow federal funding of stem cell research. And he made it sound as if Bush wouldn't allow that. Well, it had never been allowed before. It wasn't that Bush denied it, but he was saying, you know, but what was the headline? The headline that day was that Obama says we're not going to allow faith to get in the way of science. That was the big headline. The very next day, Barack Obama did a second executive order to ban federal funding of stem cell research. Now you go, wait, the next day, then why did he do an executive order allowing it? The headline, he wanted to start his administration off with the fact that he was going to attack religion, specifically Christianity. But here's the thing that I see, the real danger that I see with politics, and you gave the perfect example. You gave Jeffers. We could look at Billy Graham had suffered the same thing. You look at Jeffers, who gets into the political realm. You know, maybe he was a good theologian before, but now that he's into politics, he's now claiming that, you know, he's now side by side with Paula White, claiming she's a Christian.
Yes.
Okay. She's a heretic, and he's going to sit side by side with her, and give her credibility. It's now why? Because the same reason Billy Graham did what he did. Their focus became trying to influence politicians rather than people,
and grow a huge platform. I mean, David Jeremiah was showing up in those early meetings too, right? So that's another one that was just a shock to all of us. And it's a shame because I really enjoyed listening to Robert Jeffress a lot. And now it's hard to take him seriously with his
he completely turns you off because he uses the first Baptist Dallas platform every Sunday, as a political stage now. And yes, he is advocating for Donald Trump. But again, his duty, his first and primary duty, yes, is to feed that flock and to feed those sheep and to proclaim the gospel. And if he were doing that, he wouldn't have to do any political activism.
Well, activism. This is the thing that in the paper, and you know, I'll have it in the show notes, but I'm showing it right there, is at strivingfraternity.org. It's called Political Activism: A Christian Role. The reality is that what I challenge people is the fact that there is a big problem when you have people taking money. They're Christian ministries. I'm very much against this. Christian ministries that are being politically active. Or like you're saying with Jeffers, his role is as pastor. Now, if he wants to resign as pastor and go into the political realm and start some political campaign, fine, go do that. Raise money for that. But do not take money that is being that's given for God's work, and you're going to use that for political ends. And this is the thing I have real issue with. I've separated from ministries because I saw them just always talking politics. Look, I don't have a problem with it if they're a political organization. I do have a problem with it when you say you're a Christian organization and all you're doing is trying to affect politics. Because that's not the Christian mission. The mission of the church is to make disciples, not a moral America. Big difference there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm gonna read a little bit here for everybody, but I have one comment first. Has anyone actually seen Ruth Bader Ginsburg like speak in the last 8 months? Because I got to be honest with you, and this is crazy, but I keep thinking Weekend at Bernie's. You know how they kept propping him up, trying to make him look alive. Like, I can only imagine
never
if
saw
they would do
don't
this
know what
for
you're
the last
about.
6 months to try to keep her, alive long enough for the next election.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean,
So I want to do some reading here because I think this might help some people listening in on this. This is I'm going to read Romans 13 verses 1-7. Right. This is the passage that Sean, you quoted from earlier, or at least referenced. So let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval, for he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be in subjection, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for the authorities are ministers of God, attending to this very thing. Pay to all what is owed to them, taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed. Now, I read this because this, I believe, is the backdrop to what was written in the Declaration of Independence. And so I'm going to read now the first two chapters here of the, first two paragraphs of the Declaration of Independence. So it says, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to be to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they were endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new governments, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. And I'm actually going to stop there. I encourage people to read on in this, but here's the key to this is presuppositionally, where do rights come from? There's a wonderful book by a friend of mine, Jay Lucas, who wrote the book, and Pastor Jay Lucas of Grace Community Church in a small town in Ohio, and it's a Washington courthouse, which is escaping my mind for another Joe Biden moment. But he wrote the book called The Rights Fight, and it presuppositionally says, where do rights come from? And they nailed it here in the Declaration of Independence. Rights do not come from society. They do not come from our personal belief systems. They don't come from the majority, and they certainly don't come from governments. Our rights come to us by our Creator. The sovereign God who made everything in this universe, made everything on this planet, made us, created us in his image, the crowning glory of his creation, the last thing he made on day six of creation before he rested. He is the one who has the right to give us rights. And he is the one who has the sole authority over the ability to give out rights. Government is merely a construction to protect us in a number of ways, one of which I believe, first and foremost, is to protect us in the rights that are God-given. And I think when we read through the passage in Romans 13, as well as and understanding that as the backdrop, and then reading here in the Declaration of Independence, we have a responsibility to protect our rights. And Sean, you said it earlier, us three and pretty much everybody listening tonight and that will listen to this have the blessing of being able to be born in the United States of America, have the blessing to be born in a country that still has a lot of freedoms, although a lot have been stripped away over the years, but still has some semblance of the country that was created 200 some years ago and had as its founding fathers mostly Christian men. Yeah, some deists and whatnot in there. But, you know, I hope it serves as at least a little bit of an understanding of where some of us might be coming from with rights and our need for protecting them.
Sean, you want to add anything to that?
No, I mean, that's exactly, I mean, when I had referenced Romans 13 earlier and stating that, I mean, that's just perfectly on point.
Yeah. I do think I put up a comment earlier. Humble Clay had something funny to say. He just said, Democrats won't be voting for Biden. They're going to be voting for a VP pick.
That's true.
It really, so, you know, it's kind of interesting scenario that I have heard is that, you know, he's announced he's going to have a woman vice president pick. There's talk that he's going to pick Michelle Obama, which would be really interesting because,
that's talk about that. I think that's highly unlikely. If you really look back at history, very recent history, the second 4 years of the Obama term, where was Joe Biden?
Yeah, but Joe Biden wants to get elected. And
well, he does. But here's my point. My point was Obama had Joe Biden in. He had him shut up. He had him not speaking. No. There's no possible way on this God's green earth that they are going to allow Michelle Obama to come in as an underling to Joe Biden.
Well, sure they will, because as soon as he gets in office, then the Democrats will announce that Joe Biden is not qualified for office because he can't remember his first name, and then they're gonna exit him out the door, and she gets in without having to even run. She'll be entitled to it.
I am just offended that he isolated every other man of every ethnicity across the United States by saying he was going to pick a woman. The hypocrisy that knows no bounds.
Well, wait,
it is unbelievable.
Wait, here's the party. I mean, this is the irony. You look at the whole primary, okay? That whole primary with everyone talking about intersectionality, everyone promoting, I'm a woman, I'm this, I'm that. Everyone's got their, you know, I'm a homosexual. Everyone's got their thing they're promoting, why you got to vote for them for their victim status based on intersectionality. And what have you ended up with? Two old white guys, right?
Oh, it's classic. And they're gonna, it makes you just want to laugh.
Yeah, and they're like, well, we're going to have a female for a running mate.
No. two very old white guys.
Yeah, because I think the best comment was when it was hilarious when someone was like, you know, saying to Bernie, I think it was Michael Bloomberg, you were against millionaires until you became one, and then you were against billionaires.
Sure. I mean, it's classic. The hypocrisy is nauseating to no end.
Oh. So
yeah.
All right, so we have one person in here. He wants to talk about something different than politics. So I want to see if we have anything else, Anthony, that you wanted to address with the way Christians vote and things like that, or Sean, because we could probably talk politics. You know, knowing the three of us, we could talk about it for a while. But
yeah, we can talk about it for. I'm good with what I've wanted to kind of get off my chest tonight. So. I'm good with that. I will say this, that us three may have to have another show because I have a suspicion that you're going to see a podcast come out in the next week or two that is going to do their absolute best to directly refute everything we said today. so we might have to reconvene and set the record straight. Because I don't believe that this is an argument that I don't think you can argue any other way than the way we've argued
tonight. It's really simple. If you voted for a third party candidate, you didn't want to vote for Donald Trump, then you really were helping Hillary Clinton to win. Okay, if she had won right now, would we be?
That's a fact.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. Would we be where we are? I mean, just look at everything going on. Look at where our economy was. I think the reason that we'll be able to rebound after this virus thing is because of where the economy was, because of things that were done. Do we really think that, you know, we have a liberal press that is doing everything to give cover to China right now and to excuse, you know, the fact that they didn't tell us that this whole worldwide pandemic could be very different if China would have been more forthright, and they don't want to address that. They didn't want to deal with that, right? So if Hillary was president, would we be seeing so many abortion clinics closed? No. Would we be seeing the private sector being active the way we are in this pandemic? No. Would we see America leading the charge in any of that? No. We would be in a very mm-hmm. different state if she was, you know, Humble Clay nails it. You know, ISIS would be thriving. I mean, that's what we'd be seeing, you know, and so, you know, here we got Matt Slick, who should just join in here, is saying China can't be trusted. We should get Matt. What are you doing watching? Get in here. Go to apologeticslive.com.
Right before the show started, he was going to join in. So.
Where are you, dude? Now, you want to talk about someone with political views. He jumps in now. We're never getting to Donnie's question. And when we get to Donnie's question, Matt's going to really go off.
Well, let's get Donnie's question. But Sean, why don't you do you have anything else you wanted to say before we bring the other?
I was just going to say that, you know, if you've got, even for the Never Trumpers that are evangelicals, you know, if religious conservatives have to choose between what they see as a dueling dumpster fire between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, hands down, because of everything that Andrew had just stated, they're going to choose Donald Trump from an evangelical standpoint. There's no other option other than to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
I agree. And so, yeah, so if people want to respond, it would be interesting to see what the response is going to be to try the argument. So let's just deal with the arguments that will be made, because they're predictable, right? That, you know, voting for a lesser of two evils, you know, we have to vote for the candidate who is really what they're going to say is the most biblical Christian. Okay. So let me ask you guys a question. You know, in your life, have you hired people to do work that are Christians, and yet once you hire them, you realize they do bad work and you don't want to hire them again?
Well, I mean, look, as a dental practice owner for 14 years, I went to practice, you know, before we sold it over a year ago. I will say the last staff I had before we sold the practice, they were almost all Christian. It was the best staff we had in all these years. But they're all Christian except for one. Prior to that, I felt we got taken advantage of more by Christians than we did non-Christians. Not all of them.
Yeah.
But it happened a lot. But it was really shocking to me.
The point being is, just because someone's a Christian does not mean they're going to do a good job as an elected official. Okay? And so you might have someone who's a Christian that would not make a good president. I mean, if you stuck me in that office, I wouldn't do a good job. I just don't have the skill set for it. I may be a Christian. Yeah. If you stuck Matt in that, we would be an even worse case. But the whole point is, it's not about being Christian that makes that someone able to do that job best. The question is, who can do that job as president best? So, Matt, welcome.
Wait, I thought you were bringing Donnie on. Wait. So you're bringing this big ugly guy on?
Yeah, well, he's got more hair. Did you? Did you guys just see? He's got coronavirus. You see, he just coughed. You guys see that? He's contagious over there. And he's old. He's in that dangerous. You know, Matt's in that dangerous zone. You know, where it's deadly for him. He's old.
Yes, I'm 63. That is true. Thank you very much. Hey, but my wife is what I'm concerned about because of her health issues. She's 61. Yeah. She has compromised issues. So,
Sean, Matt, Sean, and you guys met before.
Hey, Sean, how you doing, buddy?
First time, good. Hey, we have no business talking about these. We're four old white evangelical men.
Well, no. Wait.
We are the bottom of the totem pole in intersectionality, that's for sure.
Look, Sean, you can say
we could run for the Democratic presidency.
Yeah, we could.
So Matt, let's give you a shot with you've been watching, listening. So, give us your thoughts.
Well, I did a walk around the neighborhood. My wife followed me in the car, and we talked, and I had to get some stuff and do a few things.
So she was stalking you.
What's that?
She was stalking you.
She was stalking me. That's right. She needs to get out, and she can't do too much. So, you know, but so we had a good time. And I came back and thought I'd come back in. I'm going to work on an article. People are asking me on the radio show if isolation is biblical. So I'm doing the research on quarantine procedures in the Old Testament and write an article. Yes, it is, and things like that. But, you know, so I'm working on it and thought I'd listen to you guys and waste more time.
Okay, so you, if I remember correctly, you did not vote for Trump.
No.
Do you think you're going to vote for him this time, and if so, why?
I don't know. In principle, I'm a constitutionalist, and I believe in the Constitution. In fact, when Anthony was reading the preamble, I was like, oh, man, that thing is so good to hear. It's so well written. And I believe that people need to uphold the Constitution. I think the Constitution's a brilliant document. And I mean brilliant. One of the best documents ever written in history outside Scripture. And that if we were to follow it, we would do very well. And what bothers me a great deal is you'll see these hypocrites, these whitewashed sepulchers, get up and put their hand in the Bible and then swear that they will, before God, swear that they will uphold the Constitution, and then they do everything against the Constitution. So I'm against that. Trump has made us, he's done a lot of good. I certainly like his obstreperous style. But I don't know if I'm going to vote for him because I'm just in principle. I may want to just vote constitutionally and then be able to say I never voted for Trump or whoever the other candidate might be. And that way I can maybe retain some objectivity in the eyes of others when I talk about politics and stuff. So
you want Biden to win. Okay.
Biden.
So, Matt, you are part of the problem.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I have some pretty strong views. I have some pretty strong views on what needs to be done. And before the fall of the countries that throughout history, homosexuality, women's rights were prominent, believe it or not. And also the politicians voted themselves power and exclusions to the laws they would cause others to be under. And that becomes an oligarchical system. I was going to say, but it's an oligarchy, but yeah. And so then the people rioted and things like that. And we're having the same kind of problems here in this country. And the leftist, wacko, Marxist media is not helping at all. And our schools aren't helping. And, yeah, you know, so my views are a little bit more theonomic in some areas. So even though
all right, well, it's time to get rid of Matt. All right, we're putting him. See you, Matt. Yeah. That's
right. Smart man.
All right, so let's.
Well, I believe in standing up for righteousness and moving forward.
Yeah.
And not just sitting saying, let's just offer a vote. Because here's something. I knew a guy who ran for Congress in Missouri. And we sat in the car and we were talking about what happened. And he was winning in Missouri. And right before, like it was a week before the elections, a great deal of the voting machines in certain districts that were favorable to him stopped working. And then they got new voting machines in, but they were voting machines brought in by the opposite party. And I never forgot what he said. He said, and he quickly lost. And my deal is, how do you know that the votes that we're counting are counting? I don't know. I mean, you'd think that Donald Trump's election would prove my theory wrong, but I'm very skeptical. I'm not very happy about what's going on.
All right. Well, we're going to get Matt triggered because we'll bring Donnie in. And I don't know who the Facebook user is because they didn't allow for it. They didn't. If for Facebook users, go to apologeticslive.com. There's a link for so we could get your name. But it says the Facebook user says, thanks for the explanation. We do need to vote as Christians. Good night. So I'm going to bring Donnie in. He's got a question that will trigger Matt. Donnie was actually saying earlier, though, in the comments that Anthony needs to do something with his hair to look more like Donnie there. So he was saying that Anthony should shave his head like Donnie does. But Donnie, time will take care of that. Do not worry.
I keep telling my wife a little bit more goes and it's all gone. Shaving it
off. Dude, you've been saying that for a while and there's a lot gone.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so who's got the best hairline in here then? I don't know.
Yeah. Well,
if you just count the side of my head.
Yeah. So, Donnie, what's your question? Well, Donnie's got to learn how to get his
all this weight. Today.
Yeah. Donnie's got to learn how to connect his phone. Yeah. No, we can't hear you.
We see his
camera going in and out. Check your mic. Make sure it's on, then check your settings. Maybe go out or in. He's using a phone, so we could see your mouth really close, but that doesn't actually help. Kissing your phone.
I cannot do dental work through the screen.
Yeah. Anthony, how was his teeth there when he got close like that? Was
okay. So while he's figuring this out, so Matt, I have to ask this question then because I know. So if you don't vote for Trump, don't you feel that you are right now we all benefit from living in a country and in rights that we have in this country and rights that are protected much better by Trump than they would have been by Hillary.
That's for sure.
Don't you feel that you have a duty to vote for Trump, even if you don't feel he's great? I think he's protected the Constitution better than what we've seen in a number of presidents in recent years.
Actually, I think more than any president in my lifetime.
Maybe even
more than Reagan.
Yeah,
because Reagan actually worked with the Democrats at times and caved on things that he said he wouldn't cave on.
Yeah,
Donnie, try going out and coming back in.
You should be voting for Trump. So I'm kind of curious. It's a good argument. Why?
It's a good argument, and I've thought that because personally, I don't think my vote will make any difference. But that's not a good argument still. But he's done a lot of good. He really has. And what I like about him is not well. I like a lot of things about him, actually, but I like how he handles the press and he accuses them correctly and he doesn't pull punches. I love that, and I wish it would happen.
Did you listen to today's they asked him a question. What they're trying to do is they want to label him a racist for calling it a Chinese virus.
They have labeled him a racist.
Yeah, they have. And so they asked him.
A bunch of morons together, patting each other on the back and practicing talking like the kindergartners.
Well, here was the thing that was so interesting because, you know, any other president, they're worried about, what the press is going to say the next day and whatnot. They asked him a question about why, he wasn't doing enough with this whole virus and whatnot. How people could trust his leadership when he's not doing enough. And he just basically turned and said, I was the first one to close the borders to China. And what did you guys do? Y'all called me a racist and said that I shouldn't have done it, that I was overreacting, So he calls them out. That's the thing that I think for a lot of people who have been seeing the media just controlling the narrative over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It's been refreshing to see a guy who isn't playing politics. He's calling it what it is. He's calling the media out on what they do when they sit here and you know, they completely ignore him. It was funny because the one press conference, I watched him and they asked him, it's almost as if they have their articles written. They just need him to say something so that they could make it sound like he actually said it. And they're like, do you take responsibility for the lack in testing and everything else that occurred? And this was after, the doctor and all had explained that this was back from before, that this was, back from when HIV was around, they had this stuff, but it was never planned for anything like this. So it's the first time doing it. And he's like, no, I'm not responsible for the fact that the previous administration didn't do anything either. Like, this is not something that, that we expected. So the headline, he takes no responsibility. The second headline I saw is he blames Obama because, they were asking him why these things hadn't been done. It's like, well, Obama didn't do it when they had the swine flu. I guess swine flu actually would be.
Well, Obama didn't start acting until several thousand people had already died.
Died,
in America. And the media doesn't say anything about that. And Trump, it doesn't matter what Trump does. The media is so leftist that they're just going to attack him at everything and spin everything they can with the left.
I will look. Hold on. Let me see if I can bring this up.
I had back to what I don't want to avoid what Anthony said because it's a good question. In principle, when I gave up being Republican, I was a Democrat. I was never a Democrat, but I was a Republican. If anything, I gave up that because I didn't trust the Republican Party either. I moved over to constitutionalist ideology, which I believe is really where we should be, and we all should stick to that. So it's a principle I have, and that's why I didn't vote for Trump in the last election, and I don't know if I will or will not in this one. If it gets close, I think it might be close. Yeah, I'm probably going to throw my vote his way because there's nobody else I can see voting for except for a constitutionalist candidate. But then they're not going to do anything. No one's going to vote for him.
See, in 2016, I'm in Florida. He became the candidate the presidential candidate, but the Constitution Party, one of the other parties. It's a third party, but it's a laundry list of third parties. Actually, done quite well and obviously, if the Constitution Party takes votes, they're essentially pulling them from the right. They're not pulling them from the left.
And that's a disadvantage of that because if you vote that way, you split the party out, and then you weaken, and then the wackos get in. So there's a lot of strategy that got to think about.
That's how Bill Clinton got elected the first time. Ross Perot did it.
Yeah.
Ross
Perot did that.
Here's the thing, though. And this no one in the media would point out, even though they knew it. Ross Perot, 20 years prior, had been asked, would he run for president? And he said he wouldn't want to be a Republican or Democrat. He laid out a plan 20 years prior. He said the only way to get a third party is that you needed to get someone, you run against a strong president running against a very weak president, and you split the strong vote enough that you get out of it and you lose, but when you put a weak person in there, you can come back and beat him. So he ran thinking Clinton was easily beatable. He gave us Bill Clinton because of that. But I want to share this. This is Chuck. If you guys can see this, this is Chuck Schumer. Okay, and just look at the dates on this with what we were talking about. Here you have you have Schumer on February 24th saying, we've seen no sign that President Trump has any plan or urgency to deal with the spread of the coronavirus. We need real leadership and we need it fast. That was February 24th. He forgot what he posted on February 5th after Trump closed down the travel to China, where he said the premature travel ban to and from China by the current administration is just an excuse to further his ongoing war against immigrants. There must be a check and balance of these restrictions. No. So It's like
he didn't forget.
Yeah, he just didn't care.
He didn't forget. Chuck Schumer so desperately wants to be the Senate Majority Leader that there's nothing else on his brain. So he will say anything and he will do anything to do that. He didn't forget. He doesn't care.
Yeah.
What's wrong with these people? There's something mentally wrong with them. They're either demonically oppressed or they're mentally something's wrong.
Well,
I say the stupidest things.
Well, I think what it is, and I've shared this in different ways, but there are people who want power so badly that they're willing to destroy their own country to get power. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what they're doing. Donnie's trying on another computer or a device. Let's see if instead of just going out and in, he just decided to try something else. Is your mic working now?
I don't know.
Yes.
Come on. Is your mic going to work? Try speaking. All right. So Donnie, you're finally here. What's your question?
Well,
that's a great question.
I think we need to start all over with English lessons so people can learn how to read the Bible.
That was your question?
He's really trying to trigger Matt, I think.
Well, okay, there, you see the debate on women preachers, and you tell them read what, 1 Timothy.
Yeah.
And they...
Well, either you can't get your question out or your internet's bad.
Yeah.
Okay. And you ask them to read it, and they're having a hard time.
What, reading 1 Timothy 2?
Huh?
That you're saying that people are having a hard time just reading 1 Timothy 2, 12 to 14?
John 3, 16, 1 Timothy 2. I thought we could have a striving for eternity English lesson.
Oh, you mean on why is it that people can't just believe the Bible for what it says and understand what it says?
Right, right, right. Why did you lose your English skills, reading skills?
Well, hey, think about this. The word episodic really is apropos here. Something that's episodic is very quick. Episodes, very quick, very quick. So what are we taught to do in society but to think episodically? I tell people to do this every now and then. Go to the TV and watch any show, except for news shows. They're structured differently. But entertainment shows, you watch and just count in seconds how long before the frame angle changes. Do it in commercials and the whole bit, and you'll see that it's 1, 2 seconds, 1 second, 3 seconds, 2 seconds, 1 second. It's very, very quick. When you're on social media, you can switch back and forth. Short messages, very quick, very quick. Deep thought, critical thought, long thinking, and deep thinking is not taught. If anything, our technology and other areas are working against that kind of idea. So, as I don't know if you guys know, I have Asperger's, and so one of the advantages of it is I'll get in and start thinking and I'll start working very deeply, and I can do that for a long period of time. Well, not many people have that disadvantage or advantage, however we want to call it. So when I see people that I'm dealing with, they can't focus, they can't think things through very clearly. And so we have this kind of problem. I think this is one of the underlying factors of why people can't read properly, understand things properly, think critically, etc. And they pay attention to news media, they pay attention to sitcoms, they pay attention to liberal ideas in all areas. They're not taught to be critical thinkers, so they can't do that when it comes to reading as well.
I say the same thing about people who won't vote for Trump but call themselves Christians.
Boom, mic drop.
No, it's something I've been worried about. I remember I graduated from high school in 1975, and I remember very, very clearly. I was a good student. I took physics, trigonometry, Spanish 4, all this stuff. I wanted to learn, and I remember in my English class, I didn't learn crap.
I don't even think... I
didn't learn anything.
I don't think Anthony was even born in 1975.
He wasn't.
Yeah. Bernie Sanders was 102 in 1975.
Hey, guys, I remember the Kennedy assassination.
Where were you?
The moon landing.
Where were you?
He was like two.
I remember when the Beatles first came out. Yeah, I remember that stuff. Oh, yeah. Vietnam War. I almost got drafted. You know, I remember stuff. But at any rate, yeah, I'm old and starting to show it. But, yeah, that's right. What I think.
Hey, Matt, real quick, before it would be good. You know, there's been a lot of people who have been praying for Neek, for your wife. Could you give an update on how she's doing? Anything that you want to share?
Well, she doesn't want me to say too much, but yeah. How about if I generically say that she's had some setbacks. 3 weeks ago, she's in the hospital. I had to cut a conference attendant short, and she had bile duct problems, and she's had various surgeries. She's got 2 more cracked ribs, a cracked vertebra. So when I walked around the block, we have a scooter that someone donated to us so that she could get around the block. And she wouldn't even take that because the vibration might injure her bones. So she just sat in the car and we just walked. And so that's how she's doing. And plus, we found a new problem she's got that's... It's pretty bad. It's called stupidest husbandess.
Oh, no, she's had that for a long time.
Yeah, well, it's been discovered. apparently, large amounts of alcohol really helps with that one.
Yes. But, No. I know that large amount of alcohol is supposed to make someone look better looking if you have enough of it, but it won't help her. I'm sorry. She could try that all she wants. It won't help in your case.
It will not help. Yeah, she's too smart for that. Hey, yeah. Honey, you want to take it?
So, all right. So we got someone that's posted this a couple times. He says, can some of you name a number of things you don't like that Trump's done politically? Now, here's the thing that we've already mentioned things we don't like about Trump. Here's the thing that I find so interesting. Have you guys ever remembering any liberal being asked, can you name something that you don't like that Obama did politically? You see, that question never gets asked on the left, does it?
Right.
No, I think it's a good question,
It could be a good question.
What he doesn't like.
The point I'm saying is the expectation is, and this is what the media generates, is that if you're on the right, you're supposed to be critical even of your own candidate. But if you're on the left, you're not supposed to say anything if you disagree. And the question itself shows that, you know, there are people who are conditioned with what the media is trying to push, which is anti-Christian. I mean, their agenda is a very anti-Christian agenda. They're not journalists anymore. They're activists. And they're just using their journalism for their activism.
Yep.
Okay.
You got that right. That's the only smart thing you ever said.
Now, you know, I'll answer the question. There's one thing. I mean, there's several things I don't like politically. Now, we have to keep in mind something. It's not like the president passes laws, right? I mean, you have to have Congress that passes laws. So some of my criticisms would be when they had the House and the Senate and the presidency in the first 2 years, there are some things that I expected to get done. Mm-hmm. I expected a National Concealed Carry Act. That the concealed carry was going to happen. If you had any license in any state, it'd be good in every state, or just constitutional carry everywhere. I expected that to happen because that was talked about the year before. I expected
the wall.
He didn't do the wall. Suppressors to not have to have a special stamp for them. So a lot of mine are gun things, but I expected those things to come through. I expected Planned Parenthood to be defunded really fast. And look, let's face it. As much as Trump has, I think, tried to do, it's still, to me, a black mark. Not enough got done, especially in those first 2 years when we had the opportunities.
Take the biggest thing he's known for, the wall. He waited until the Republicans were out of office to start pushing that. Mm-hmm. You know, why did he wait on that? Now, the argument they'll make is he was doing other things. Go ahead, Sean.
You make a good point, Anthony, because you're bringing up the different branches of government, which most Americans are clueless about. This small group of bots that have chased Bernie Sanders around the country. because he screams free, 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 free. Don't understand that even if God allowed Bernie Sanders to be elected, absolutely nothing would ever get done because his free that he likes to claim would not be popular with either party. They would not be popular with the Democrats and or the Republicans. And here we would sit for 4 years under nothingness.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right, because most of the Democrat Party is not willing to accept the Marxism that he touts.
They're not.
Yeah.
They're not.
Well, they're I mean, look, it is interesting. You look at Bernie and he's being, you know, he's being just rushed out a second time. You know, they stole the election from him in the you know, nomination last time, and they're doing it again. I mean, are you telling me that he was winning all these states, and then as soon as everyone drops out, they drop out so that, you know, that Biden can get more of their, you know, so they're not splitting that vote anymore, and then all of a sudden he just wins everything? I mean, even Warren dropped out, and Warren, her vote would have been splitting Bernie's. So
back to my point earlier that I made about the fact is that we are a two-party system.
Yeah.
Yes, there's other parties, but they're meaningless. We are a two-party system. Well, Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat.
Look, Bernie Sanders
he is not backed financially by the Democratic Party. He is an independent, and he wasn't going to win in 2016. He's not even going to be the primary candidate. He is not a viable candidate for the Democratic Party.
If you want proof that this is a two-party system, whether we like it or not, it's really simple. Look at the three people we're talking about. We're talking Bernie, we're talking Biden, we're talking Trump. Biden is the only one that's actually a party guy. Trump was a Democrat for years, maybe at best you could say a libertarian at heart, until he wanted to win the presidency and then ran as a Republican. Bernie is a socialist, but will never get elected on a socialist party, so he runs as a Democrat. They know they will never win other than the two-party system.
That's a fact.
And you bring something up that's really interesting. You know, Trump had been Democrat most of his life, right? It was a big, I mean, how many
supported
times
the Clintons,
Clinton and others, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have that. But look at the last two Republican candidates that ran. You have Mitt Romney, who, look at his track record as governor in Massachusetts. He was a socialist. He was a socialist before people knew what socialists were. And his health care that was there. I mean, they took Obamacare and modeled it after what happened in Massachusetts. And so not only do you have that, but then you got John McCain, who some parts of him were way right, but in the reality, he was a Democrat in almost everything. So like this is what's really scary for conservatives and people of conservative values is we actually have not put up a conservative value candidate ever since George W. And even he wasn't great.
Yeah. Correct.
So
all right, we got a couple minutes left. Anyone have any last things that they want to wrap up with?
So Matt, you should go back and listen to the first hour and 10 minutes of the show that you missed,
and then repent.
Find it good, leading up to the part you listened to.
you're saying he should
do good stuff. So
he should listen and then repent for.
Yeah.
We're gonna.
I understand the logic.
Okay,
I do.
Matt Slick live tomorrow. We're gonna be hearing Matt going, "I'm voting for Trump." What's more important, Matt, voting for the best candidate or just being able to say I want to be objective? I mean, they're not going to consider you objective anyway. It doesn't matter. So just vote your heart, do the right thing.
That's what I plan to do. Never know. It just depends on what is there at that time.
Yeah. Sean, go ahead. I want to make sure you get, because you're our guest.
So evangelicals again in 2016 overwhelmingly voted for Donald Trump at 81%. It's going to be higher this time.
Yeah.
You've got never Trumpers, you've got always Trumpers, and then you've got hesitant Trumpers. You've kind of got this third party. The hesitant Trumpers are still going to vote for Trump, regardless if they're evangelical or not. Our duty as Christians is to vote. We're placed in America under a system that allows us to do so. We should follow that rule of law as we are commanded to do and vote. And Matt, you have every right to vote whom you want to vote for. I care not who you vote for. I think we all should vote. We should all go cast a vote because that is the God-given right that we have, yep, that's been bestowed upon us. And I don't blame anyone if they want to vote for the Democratic Party. I don't in any right mind see how they could do so and be a Christian with the platform that's there. But nonetheless, we should do it. We have the God-given right to do so, and that's what we should do.
And the thing that I'll say that we started out with is I think that, yes, we should vote because we have a responsibility to vote as Christians, but we need to be about the business that we as Christians should be doing, which is the gospel, more than the message of politics. I think that the big problem we have in this country is that people gave up the gospel message for the political message, and now they're complaining because people are not, you know, we don't see the political message. We're seeing less morality. Well, it's because you went political instead of going biblical. And I think that's a problem that we see. And so, you know, look, we have our individual views and our individual positions. We'll see what ends up happening when election time comes. But I think this, I'll say this. One thing that is refreshing is finally we're having a President Trump that actually sounds like president. You know,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
These daily briefings, if you listen to him, it's like he finally is he's talking about the country coming together. He's talking about Democrats and Republicans working together. He's like, you actually see where he's trying not to insult the Democrats. Even he's got the media that's constantly prodding him. It's like he's finally showing a little bit of restraint on his tongue, which I think is the big thing that everybody has wanted, right? I mean,
but not with his thumbs.
Yeah. the issue is I think that, you know, as Christians, whether Barack Obama, Donald Trump, we as Christians pray for our president. He is our president regardless, because God has put him in that place. It doesn't matter if we agree with him or not. We support him. We pray for him. And we always, this is very true for Trump as well as Obama, we want them to get saved. All right.
Yep.
They need to repent and believe in Jesus Christ and have eternal life. That's the most important thing. That's more important than what he could do with handling of this virus thing. Even that's going to sound crazy to many people. But the reality is eternity is a long time to be wrong. And it is far more important for what we do with eternity. And that is the thing that the trials we might have in this life, the things that we have in this life, they're going to pale in comparison to what we end up seeing with eternity. Okay. This is from Romans chapter 8. Paul saying, "For I consider that the suffering of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory that is revealed to us." So that is the perspective of the Christian. We're struggling right now. We see the struggles with this virus, and, you know, poor Neek is stuck at home with Matt all day and not able to get out and see normal people. That's got to be hard. And so,
man,
got to work that in, right?
Rush to throw me under.
But the reality is, the suffering that Matt's wife is going through right now, the suffering that many people are going through with this virus, all of this, the suffering that Democrats are going through having to listen to a Republican president, it all pales in comparison to for those of us who know Christ, it pales in comparison to the glory that we'll have one day, being glorified in a future state, being made right with him. That is far more important. And that is a far more important message than the message of the political system. And so my challenge would be for the Christians, it is far more important to know the gospel message than the Republican message. It's far more important to be sharing the gospel message than the Republican message. That would be my challenge. Now, next week, I don't know if this is, if we're going to do this for next week, we may have Emilio Ramos coming in to answer questions on covenant theology. He's going to be recording with me tomorrow for the Rap Report. For folks who haven't been listening to Rap Report, we've been doing a series this month on the church. We got into dispensationalism versus covenant theology, which John MacArthur was very kind enough to properly put the context to covenant theology, answered it very well at Shepherd's Conference, upsetting many covenant theologians.
Catholic theology, right?
Yeah, basically. Okay. I was glad he went through the history of that. What we'll do at the end of this month is actually play the clip of him talking about that. And then I played Emilio's response to that. And so I sent it to Emilio and said, would you want to have a longer response? He was like, sure. So I'm going to record with him tomorrow for the Rap Report. So just go check out Andrew Rapport's Rap Report and podcast, and you can check that out. And then Emilio may come on to this show to do 2 hours. So maybe Matt will come in so that's, you know, we can have like five different views. You know, Emilio's view, my view, and all of Matt's different views. And so... So Matt,
what, I can tell you this.
It's like having 57 genders.
Yes,
yeah.
All in one person. That's Matt. Yeah, Matt. What's the shirt you wanted? What was that thing that you had? That explained all the views that you have.
You mean the statement I have, like on a T-shirt?
Yeah, you had. I forget what it was, but you're like, you know, I'm an amillennial. This, that, the other.
I'm an amillennial. Wait, I'm a 5-point amillennial non cessationist covenantal Calvinist. What are you? So it was on a T-shirt I used to wear.
There's all kinds of things that don't actually work with it. You don't fit into any system the way they're supposed. You know, they're laid out. Come on, man.
No, I don't. I don't fit into anybody's thing. I believe the wicked are taken before the good at the end of the tribulation, which at the end of that is the completion of the new heavens or the new heavens or new earth will be made at that point.
You're a
continuationist, 5-pointer.
You're an amillennial who believes in a future for Israel. You know.
Yep.
So, I mean, you're all messed up. So you're right. Maybe it would be 10 views. Amelia's mine and the rest of yours.
I just read scripture to go, oh, hey, in a lot of areas, I don't have enough experience or knowledge to be able to make a really, you know, assertive statement, but I'll go, hey, I'll hold that for now until something else comes along, you know, which way is the doctrinal wind blowing?
Hey, so as we close out, I'm just going to let folks know I'm just going to ask. I don't typically do things like this, but I'm going to ask for prayer. There's some things going on in the life with my family, and some big decisions that we have in front of us to make. And so I will covet the prayers. I don't want to get into the details just yet. They may, maybe in the future we might be. But we do got a lot of things going on, so that will affect a lot of stuff. But other than just moving with my empty shelves, who I guess for Mark Spence's sake, my books and I are practicing social, you know, distancing. They've distanced themselves to my garage, and they're packed away waiting for me to eventually at some point move. And so, I do want to thank Sean.
I do. Go visit them every now and then. Mine are in my garage, too.
Yeah, but yours aren't in boxes. Oh, wait, okay, they are.
Donnie Jax just said it was Beth Moore that convinced Matt to not vote for Trump. Is that true?
No. No. I just wanted to vote for a constitutionalist. That's all.
Oh, so it was Beth Moore, huh? We should tweet that out.
Should change her name to Beth Less.
All right.
Well, like Beth Go Home, but yeah.
Yeah. So all right. Well, I appreciate you guys coming in. It was a lively discussion. We should be back next Thursday night, and we'll see if Matt's going to be able to come back in. We never know. Depends. It's a week-by-week thing with him, so be praying for he and Neek. Yeah. Pray more for Neek, because not only is her health bad, but she's still stuck with this husband of hers. So, you know, just
true.
Don't know what to do about that.
Yeah, in all seriousness, thank you, Matt, for being on. Sean, big thank you for coming in. It was fun having you in.
Appreciate you guys.
To the show.
Appreciate you guys. I'll have you guys on Word for America again someday.
Oh, that'd be good.
Sounds good.
It's been a while. So until next week, remember to strive to make today an eternal day for the glory of God. And we'll see you next week.